The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily radio show, Saturday edition. Welcome to all of you that don't typically listen to us on a daily basis. I know quite a few of you do, but it's great to see a larger audience watching us on the YouTube stream. We've got the stream on, our website, and of course, it's playing at KPCG there in North Edmond, Oklahoma. So we're certainly happy to have you with us on this special broadcast. Quite a few people, of course, are locked down in California. Now we add New York to the list. I think Illinois is joining all of these radical left-wing governors in a complete and total shutdown, a lockdown. What a week, what a couple of weeks it's been. In fact, we had one of our members a week ago, I think it's the Friday evening or afternoon email that goes out and gives a rundown of what's happening in the work. And it was said last Friday, so 8 days ago, that my father taped this Key of David program that was to play this weekend, titled The History of Lucifer. And she made the remark that, well, that means this next week is going to be interesting as far as world news or world events are concerned. And she's right. Satan certainly hates being exposed. And he knows, as the Bible says, he knows that his time is short. And he is angry right now. And he is, as my father has said in the last few months, he is trying to blot out Israel of all the peoples on earth. His chief target is Israel. Whether you look at it spiritually or physically, it's going after the nations of Israel. His goal is to blot us out. I just want to remind you of what my father wrote in the March 2020 Trumpet. This is the featured article, America Has Been Fundamentally Transformed. And he says here, Satan hates everything God is about. He harbors terrible hatred for Israel, spiritual Israel, God's church, and physical Israel. And he uses Antiochus-type men to undermine and destroy Israel, even to blot it out entirely if he can. He says here, Satan's goal is to blot out the name of Israel from under heaven. That means from all over the entire earth. He goes for complete and total obliteration. Satan will, he'll use a nuclear bomb to go after a little mosquito. Scorched earth. He just wants to blot us out, even the name of Israel. 2 Corinthians 4 and verse 3, it says, but if our gospel be hid, it's hid to them that are lost. Verse 4 says, in whom the God of this world has blinded the minds of them which believe not, lest the light of the glorious gospel of Christ, who is the image of God, should shine unto them. So Satan is the God of this world. You look at this world today, and quite obviously, this is not God's world. This is Satan's world. The devil is the God of this world. Ephesians 2 and verse 2 says that he's the prince of the power of the air. He surcharges the air with his attitudes, with his impulses, with his emotion. Revelation 12:9, of course, says that he's deceived the whole world. The whole world worships him as its God. He's blinded the minds of men, as it says there in 2 Corinthians, carrying on in the March trumpet. My father said, this world worships the devil, but it's not even close to the way any Antiochus worships Satan. That's why the radical left, listen to this, that's why the radical left is far worse than communism and Marxism. He says it's time for the nations of Israel to wake up to what's happening to their nations. We're facing catastrophe, he said. Only God can save us from the worst physical crisis ever to strike this planet. Only God can save us. We cannot save ourselves. This is the central lesson God's trying to teach us. He wants us to look to him in these times of trial and test, in these times of crisis, tragedy. We have an article featured, by the way, at thetrumpet.com. There's a banner, in case you haven't noticed the website yet today. There's a banner at the top that talks about how to survive the coronavirus crisis. Some wonderful instruction there. I think Mr. Hilliker wrote that one. My father, of course, wrote the one in the April edition, the featured edition, or the featured article in the latest Trumpet magazine. It's certainly a real crisis. It's a real disease. And it's hitting some nations a lot harder than others. You can look at China. You can look at Italy, Iran. Italy just gets pounded. You look, and I know everyone's following the daily tracker. How many deaths are there? How many deaths are there? And we've spent the better part of this week on this program just comparing that to other sicknesses and diseases, both physical and spiritual, that we're contending with on a daily basis, a weekly basis, a yearly basis. But here is yet another disease, and disease is not normal. These are curses, of course. It is real. We've had, I think, six or seven of our own brethren, our own supporters in Europe that have come down with this virus. And one of them, sadly, this week has died. It's a real crisis. It's a real curse. And there's still a lot we don't know, but from the statistics that are starting to come in, it looks like in Italy, this flu or whatever you want to call it, it's 2 to 3 times worse than the ordinary flu. We've made quite a bit of, quite a few comparisons this past week, because it's been enlightening to me over the last week and a half too, just to learn how many people, how many tens of thousands of people are dying, hundreds of thousands are dying every year from influenza, from the common flu. The CDC estimates it's between 290,000 to 630,000 or 640,000. Well, it's the CDC or the WHO, I forget. I think it's the CDC that makes that estimation. But Italy right now is just being pounded, and they're the reason, in large part, for these numbers that are increasing each day. Quite a few other nations have gotten a handle on this crisis. With Italy, though, and they do have an aging population, the north of Italy does have a large concentration of Chinese workers and citizens, I guess Italian citizens. And quite a few that have died are elderly. They're smokers. I think that country is maybe more social than some others, but we don't know all the reasons. Richard made, a good point this morning just about the European socialist healthcare system. That doesn't help matters. No matter what the socialists are out there saying, we need more centralized, socialized healthcare. Well, Italy has it. And when it's free for everyone, whether you have an epidemic or not, the beds are generally full. The hospitals are generally full. And so there are a lot of nations, in Europe especially, very concerned about people making a run on the hospitals all at the same time. That's happening in Italy, and they're worried about it happening here in the UK, which is why they came out just yesterday, last night, with draconian measures of their own. I'll get to that here in just a second. In any event, the death count is not the only thing to be praying about. There's people that are losing their work. They're losing jobs because of this. There's a lot of side effects to this so-called cure. The cure is causing more trouble than the disease, as I've been saying. We'll get to some of that on today's program as well. Switching over to my father's April article, the one on the coronavirus and other modern plagues. He talks about a lot of other things in that article, by the way. But he says here, we're already experiencing the preliminary stages of what the Bible terms Great Tribulation, in which one-third of the populations in America and other Israelitish nations will die before being directly attacked by foreign enemies. We're getting a small preview of what's going to happen even before the invasion, even before the attack. And then my father says this too, the coronavirus is only a small part of the overall picture. Other plagues are already spreading in our cities. And he talked about the curse of homelessness and old diseases, even from the Middle Ages, that are going to make a return because of people living in filth and squalor and leaders who for generations have done nothing about these problems. They just turn a blind eye to it. Now, all of a sudden, they're very concerned about the public's health. The cure, as I've been saying this past week, it's worse than the disease. How do you explain this irrational fear, this widespread panic that CNN and politicians and world leaders, diplomats, bureaucrats, how do you explain this widespread panic that they're trying to stir up? The mass hysteria. You talk about disproportionate. As I say, it's like going after a mosquito with a nuclear bomb. Total lockdown in California. They've had 24 deaths from a sickness or a disease, and the whole state, 40 million people, 24 deaths in a state of 40 million. And it's all locked down. New York's had 56 deaths. Locked down. Illinois, they're joining the two. All these deep blue states. Illinois had 5 deaths throughout the extent of the coronavirus crisis. 5 deaths over the last couple of months. Everything shut down. I saw a tweet yesterday, lockdowns and panic buying due to the coronavirus pandemic could ignite world food inflation, even though there are ample supplies. Even though there's enough food, it's igniting this panic. And we see it here. We see it here in the heart of the UK, in the Midlands. People are off to the shop to buy toilet paper. The new gold, as one commentator said. Britain has had 177 deaths. From the northern tip to the southern coast of this island, 177 deaths. And yesterday they announced a shutdown, a nationwide shutdown. Pubs, restaurants, cinema, gymnasiums, they're all closing down. And then, of course, the government's there to simultaneously introduce a massive economic bailout package. Is this going to improve the health of our nations? Speaking of sickness, says here the government will pick up 80% of the wage bill for anyone sent home or unable to work because of the virus or the shutdown. So anyone that can't work because of this is essentially a new government employee. 80%. They're going to provide tax relief for business. They've put a cap on this wage relief at £2,500 a month. But that's still, when you spread it out over the course of however long this is, 70 million people, nobody even knows how much this will cost. The Telegraph wrote, the chancellor said it was an open-ended commitment and admitted he had no idea how much it would cost. We're just a few days into the crisis, and they're already making decisions like this. And we don't even know how deadly this disease is. I think we're all getting a pretty good sense that it spreads fast. But we don't even know if it's as lethal as other diseases, including the ordinary flu. The Spectator says this about these measures taken by the UK government. It says, at least no one can say it isn't bold. The United States is fiddling around with some possible cuts to payroll taxes. Most of Europe is stuck with some printed money from the ECB. But the UK is embarking on one of the most radical experiments in modern economic theory, and one that will no doubt be studied for decades to come. With his latest announcement today, a whole 48 hours after his last intervention, the Chancellor, Rishi Sunak, has effectively turned the UK into a wartime economy. It's the most extensive intervention in the economy ever made by a supposedly free market government anywhere in the world. In effect, we will all soon be working for the government. How long can they sustain this? The Spectator says, will it work? Up to a point, wartime command and control economies work in the moment. They rose to the challenge in World War I and II, and it will help us muddle through the battle against the coronavirus. The trouble is, it will suffer from all the problems of a wartime economy. The longer it goes on, the less efficient it will get. As the market becomes more and more warped, it will create all kinds of weird distortions as the price signal turns fuzzy, and as demand is sustained without any supply to meet it, there will be fraud and a black market and loopholes to be exploited on a massive scale. Most of all, it will be very difficult to come off of it. When the UK economy last went onto a war footing in 1939, we didn't really shake it off until Mrs. Thatcher's reforms in the 1980s. It might take just as long this time. Can we even comprehend what's coming? This is, as I said yesterday, this is the new world war that we're fighting. This. It will help, there's no question, it says. And it should ensure the UK economy comes out of this crisis in better shape than most of its rivals. But it is a huge gamble, and it will be easier to start this rescue than to stop it. See, they're all there. The leaders are all there saying, well, you know, it's just, we have to do this. We have to. But it's not forever. It's more temporary. We'll be able to roll it back, as if you ever see these socialist programs rolled back. It's like squeezing toothpaste out of the tube. Once it's out there for good. This is the new normal. Britain basically fully embracing socialism, Marxism, and really the conservative right, they're right on board with it. They're pushing for it as well. Ambrose Evans Pritchard, you've heard how often we quote from him. How's this headline for Mr. Pritchard? Boris must embrace socialism immediately to save the liberal free market. He just has to embrace it. Look, this is the only choice we have. The Spectator says coronavirus panic buying is turning Tories, that's the Conservative Party, it's turning them into socialists. It's not that long ago we were talking about how extreme Jeremy Corbyn was, or how extreme Bernie Sanders was. Now look. Now look at what's happening. And look at what it took to bring us to this point. This is all that it took. A virus that spreads evidently a little more quickly than the ordinary flu. And we've embraced, heartily embraced, socialism. Notice Hosea chapter 5. We're going to have an article coming out next week, or I think it might be going into the new Trumpet. We're putting the finishing touches on the May edition of the Trumpet, and we'll be talking about the impact of this crisis. It's certainly having an impact. It's not fake. There definitely is hype and sensational coverage. There definitely is a hoax. I'll get to that later. But the impact, that's real. The impact that it's having on this world, the disasters, and the disasters that will result from it. Look at the economic impact. Hosea 5:13, you know about this verse. It says, when Ephraim saw his sickness, and when Judah saw his wound, well, you know what happens. They go to the Assyrian for help. They go for help. We need help because we're sick. How much of it is self-inflicted? Since we're so concerned about sickness and disease at the moment, how about looking at or studying into Isaiah 1, where God says we're sick from head to toe? He's talking there about our sins. Sickness from head to toe, that's the sickness we ought to be panicking about. The one described in Isaiah 1, here in Hosea 5, verse 5 says, the pride of Israel does testify to his face. Therefore shall Israel and Ephraim fall in their iniquity. Judah also shall fall with them. I've talked about this before, just how suddenly our three nations will fall or collapse together. Look at the way all three are responding to this. Little Israel, lockdown. Britain, I guess you'd call it a soft lockdown. And then the most populated states in the United States, total lockdown. Can't leave the house except for groceries or maybe to walk the dog. Very similar to what was in place in China just a couple months ago. The communist Chinese state. Verse 9, it says, Ephraim shall be desolate in the day of rebuke. Among the tribes of Israel have I made known that which shall surely be. The princes of Judah were like them that remove the bound, it says. Therefore I will pour out my wrath upon them like water. Ephraim is oppressed and broken in judgment because he willingly walks after the commandment. He walks after the commandment of Jeroboam there. Now, God does say about Jeroboam that he uses that administration, the Jeroboam administration, to temporarily save Israel. So in the short term, even that article brings this out, these massive bailouts, that in the very, very short term, it could help Britain rebound just a little bit better, just a little bit quicker. Well, that Jeroboam prophecy, I'll just remind you of this, 2 Kings 14, verse 23, it says, and in the 15th year of Amaziah, the son of Joash, king of Judah, Jeroboam, the son of Joash, king of Israel, began to reign in Samaria, and he reigned 41 years. So he had a long and relatively stable reign, this Jeroboam II. says in verse 24, "And he did that which was evil in the sight of the Eternal. He departed not from all the sins of Jeroboam the son of Nebat." So he carried on in the same sins as Jeroboam the first. Yet, as this says, verse 26, "For the Lord saw the affliction of Israel, that it was very bitter. For there was not any shut up, nor any left, nor any helper for Israel." There's nobody to help them. They were sick, diseased, infirmed. "And the Eternal said not that he would blot out the name of Israel from under heaven, but he saved them by the hand of Jeroboam, the son of Joash." So God temporarily saves our people. He temporarily saves our nations. A temporary resurgence, as we've been saying for the past few years. Is that temporary surge over? I don't think that's likely. We have to be prepared for anything, though. I think there's some indications already that Ephraim and Manasseh could come out of this ahead of the pack. My father said just last week, this is a message that many of us will be hearing, I guess, next weekend. But he pointed out how that God's using this Jeroboam administration for a short time, a temporary time. And he said that after this coronavirus dies out, that President Trump's probably going to be seen as a hero. I saw a headline from yesterday that said, this crisis actually, never mind what his critics are saying, it actually ensures his reelection. That's the opinion of one commentator. Because he has made some pretty good decisions. He hasn't gone near as far as the extreme of Governor Cuomo and the governor of Illinois and Governor Newsom of California. But my father said last week also that you look at his enemies, the radical left, they haven't said one positive thing about President Trump throughout this crisis. From the fundamentally transformed piece, my father said, "Satan has been attacking the American superpower, and as he so often does, he's been doing this through an Antiochus type from the inside, the spirit of Antiochus, of trying to blot out the name of Israel, is strong in the radical left and in what has become the Democratic Party. The spirit is so strong, the Antiochus spirit, destroy the president at all cost, no matter the cost. He needs to be blotted out." We've been working on a timeline from the past 3-4 months. I'm hoping to get into this in greater detail in the week ahead. You can maybe look forward to that with the Trumpet Daily Radio shows next week. But it is revealing when you go back and just kind of piece it together how this crisis got started, how it was handled to begin with, what happened along the way, where we are at the moment. I think it was in December 10th, somewhere in there, where that Wuhan district or region, when the first virus emerged, the Wuhan virus or the coronavirus, and China worked for weeks trying to cover that up. They tried to blot out the Twitter feed of whistleblowers. They detained or kidnapped whistleblowers. The one primary whistleblower, remember, he died of the disease. They finally admitted to the World Health Organization, China did, that they've got this unknown illness. That was on December 31st of 2019. And the director general of the World Health Organization, he visited President Xi, I think in mid-January, and President Xi assured him that everything's good to go. We've got this under control. There's nothing to worry about here. And And this director general, as I covered on the program yesterday, he's practically a Chinese diplomat. He's practically an emissary of China. He is committed to socialized medicine. He loves the program that China has in place to confront contagious disease. He loves it. He was even celebrating it yesterday with a tweet. I'll get to that later. So all through January, he was downplaying it, the significance of this, as was China. Well, in the United States, as you might remember, there was something that was just getting off and running in the middle of January, and that would be the impeachment hearings, January the 15th, and I think the Chief Justice, he's sworn in on January 16th. And American media, they are just consumed with impeachment. For the next 3 weeks, that is all they talked about. That is all they discussed. They could care less about the prospect of a contagion, a disease, an epidemic, or a pandemic. Not even on the radar. Well, China, around that same time, they enforced this strict quarantine, putting the entire region of Wuhan under lockdown. I think that was January 23rd. But this was after there were millions of people coming in and out of Wuhan and traveling around the world during the cover-up. Well, you might have read yesterday, the Senate committee, I forget the foreign intelligence, something like that, headed up by Richard Burr, they're getting these briefings January 24th about the coronavirus. And then we now know some of these senators heard about the disease and went off and sold off all their stocks before the market crashed. It's really looking more and more like the last days of Rome. Well, hey, if everything's going to go under, we might as well raid the treasury ourselves, get a little something for us. Every man for himself. By the end of January, January 30th, the World Health Organization finally does declare coronavirus to be a global health emergency. This isn't an emergency. We do need to fight it. We don't want for it to get out of hand. But listen to the director general, his tweet. Tedros Ghebreyesus, I'll call him Tedros to keep it simple. He's the director general of the World Health Organization, the UN. It's an extension of the UN. So this is the United Nations we're talking about here. He says, I'm declaring a public health emergency of international concern over the global outbreak, not because of what is happening in China, definitely not that, but because of what's happening in other countries. Nothing to worry about in China. China's handled it great. China, they had a complete and total crackdown. They had a total lockdown. And they're eradicating the disease. What I'm really worried about is how other nations will confront this. He said this, Tedros said, in many ways, China is actually setting a new standard for outbreak response. Our greatest concern is the potential for the virus to spread to countries with weaker health systems. The translation being, if you don't have socialized medicine or socialized healthcare, you are in trouble. He is a committed advocate of social medicine, socialized medicine. As I read on yesterday's program, The Hill had a little something to say about this man's background. The director general of the WHO. It says, from the outset, Tedros has defended China despite its gross mismanagement of the highly contagious disease. As the number of cases and death toll soared, the WHO took months to declare the COVID-19 outbreak as a pandemic, even though it had met the criteria of transmission between people, high fatality rates, and worldwide spread. So, he defended the communist Chinese government, finally declared it an emergency in the end of January. That was January 30th. And you know what President Trump did the very next day? He issued a travel ban of Chinese, planes and such coming into the United States. A travel ban from China into the U.S. the day after the director general made that announcement. And do you know how the director general reacted to the travel ban back in early February? Well, he said this: "We reiterate our call to all countries not to impose restrictions that unnecessarily interfere with international travel and trade. Such restrictions can have the effect of increasing fear and stigma with little public health benefit. If you put a travel ban in place, you're going to cause widespread panic. You're going to cause widespread fear. And, oh, also, it's racist." That's what he said on February 4th. He's the director general of the World Health Organization. Well, just to mix the timeline a little bit with what was happening in the United States, President Trump's acquitted on February 5th. I think it was the day before that, he gave his State of the Union address. He says, "We're doing everything we can to confront and to arrest the spread of this virus." He had established his task force, his coronavirus task force, at the end of January. And then he faces all kinds of criticism and rebuke for putting in place that travel ban. Well, by mid-February, you start to have cases or deaths reported in Europe, France, Italy, Iran. People are starting to die from this Wuhan flu. And by the end of the month, you might remember the rally. President Trump was headed off to South Carolina, I believe it was, and that's where he talked about all of these hoaxes. He's acquitted on February 5th, and his enemies have to look for a new way to bring him down. And so he says, look, they tried with the Mueller investigation, then they tried the Ukraine phone call. Now they're politicizing this disease. Now they're weaponizing this crisis. They're using it to try to gain points politically. And then they reacted, his enemies reacted by saying, well, he's called it a hoax. He doesn't even believe it's a disease. Even after he'd taken all this action to keep it from spreading into the United States. Here's what he said. This was as he was about to leave for South Carolina. This is February 28th, just a little less than a month ago. A reporter asks him a question about this hoax, and here's how the president responded. Clip one.
Is this a hoax? Your chief of staff seemed to suggest that our coverage of this was a hoax. Do you think this is a hoax?
Well, I think that the media is, yes, I think that CNN is a very disreputable network. I think they're doing everything they can to instill fear in people, and I think it's ridiculous, and I think they're very disreputable. And some of the Democrats are doing it the way it should be, but some of them are trying to gain political favor by saying a lot of untruths.
That's what he said February 28th. And if you heard the reporter there, he says, is our coverage of this a hoax? And the president said, yes. Yes, it is. You're trying to gain political favor. Your coverage has been disreputable. Your coverage has been terrible. You're trying to instill fear. You're trying to incite panic. And we shouldn't be doing that, because we've got this under control. We're able to fight disease. That was February 28th. And then you fast forward a few days to March 3rd. And we go back to the director general of the World Health Organization, the emissary of China. He loves China. He loves the communist Chinese state. He loves their social medicine. He loves how they crack down on the disease. Just pulling grandma and grandpa out of their homes and dragging them off to a detention camp. Dragging them off to a fever clinic. He said this, the director general said on March 3rd, he talked about this virus, which he himself had said, hey, this is an emergency, so we need to face it. Now, listen here how he ramps it up to the point of full-scale panic mode. This is March 3rd, clip 2.
The second major difference is that COVID-19 causes more severe disease than seasonal influenza. While many people globally have built up immunity to seasonal flu strains, COVID-19 is a new virus to which no one has immunity. That means more people are susceptible to infection, and some will suffer severe disease. Globally, about 3.4% of reported COVID-19 cases have died. By comparison, seasonal flu generally kills far fewer than 1% of those infected.
He says globally it was 3.4%, the death rate. He said that on March 3rd. And so when you have all of these predictions, the scaremongering, 150 million Americans are going to get this, you can do the math and see that, well, millions are going to die. We're going to lose millions of people. 3.4%. The flu, it's much less than 1%. It's like 0.1%. The death rate. That's what he said. This is what The Hill had to say about the director general. It says, China recently pledged $20 million to help WHO fight the COVID outbreak, for which Tedros thanked Xi. But we know China's connections to Tedros' homeland of Ethiopia, now called East Africa's Little China, because it has become China's bridgehead to influence Africa and a key to China's Belt and Road Initiative there. Indeed, China has invested heavily in Ethiopia. It says, finally, Tedros was elected to his position with the World Health Organization in 2017, despite the fact that he was not trained as a medical doctor and had no global health management experience. This is the leader of the World Health Organization. This is who we're looking to for guidance during this time of crisis. He has no medical training. He has no global health management experience. And he gets up in front of the cameras on March 3rd and says 3.4% of you who get this disease will die. It says a former minister of the health and minister of foreign affairs for Ethiopia, Tedros is an executive member of the Tigray People's Liberation Front political party, which came to power through a struggle in 1991 and has been listed as a perpetrator in the global terrorism database. Says here, after he became the WHO's chief, critics questioned Tedros's attempt to appoint then Zimbabwe director Robert Mugabe as a WHO goodwill ambassador. He wanted Robert Mugabe to be a goodwill ambassador for the UN, for the WHO. This is the UN emissary, or the Chinese emissary. The WHO, this is the main united or international body we're looking to get us through this crisis. And he says, look, 3.4% of the people are going to die from this. The flu, this is not an ordinary flu. Hardly anyone dies from the flu. You know, earlier this week, I looked at the CDC's website. I've learned a lot, as I said at the top of the show, about just your ordinary influenza. And evidently, the CDC updates its flu season statistics every week. And so last week, I got on their website and found out, okay, a million people in America, just the American statistics, these are not worldwide statistics, but a million people in America have been tested this flu season. And 220 or 30,000 have tested positive, and 22,000 Americans have died from flu-related illness. The flu is actually quite deadly. But they estimate that something like 36 million people catch it. So a lot of people get the flu. And they use the 36 million figure when they calculate the death rate. Well, because so many millions and millions and millions and get the flu, in actuality, 22,000 people who die from it is not that bad. It's not that bad. It's not really a crisis. That's why you never hear about it. We didn't even hear about the swine flu in 2009. And that was a pandemic. That was the last pandemic. Do you remember all these lockdowns in 2009? Do you remember the United Kingdom embracing socialism in 2009? Do you remember 40 million Californians coming under house arrest in 2009? You don't remember any of that happening because it didn't. This time around is different. Why is this different? Well, let's look at some of the main players. You have the Communist Chinese state. You have the World Health Organization, an arm of the United Nations. You've got the Western media. You've got CNN. And you've got these radical leftist Democrats. The radical left, as my father said in the March issue of The Trumpet, worse. They're worse than communists. They're worse than Marxists. 22,000 deaths from influenza as of last Friday. Well, as it happens, they updated their statistics yesterday. It's every Friday. And guess what the figure is now? 23,000 deaths. So over the last week, 1,000 more people. This is according to the CDC. Over the last week, 1,000 more Americans. This is just America. Now, in the world, it's something like 300,000 to 600,000 that die every year from the flu. The flu. Over the last week, 1,000 Americans died from the flu. So far, what is the latest count for coronavirus deaths in the United States? Last I checked, it was 275, 276 total for the whole season. This is from the CDC site yesterday. Pneumonia and influenza mortality levels have been low, but this is a low season, they're saying. 23,000. It's relatively low. We've had some where it's up to 70 or 80,000. 2017 and 18 was a really bad flu season. And then, of course, the swine flu year, we lost something like 18,000 Americans to that virus and anywhere from 200,000 to 500,000 worldwide. And I've seen other articles that put the estimates even higher. It's been a low season, though, for the most part, flu-wise. But 149 influenza-associated deaths in children have been reported so far this season. This number is higher than recorded at the same time in every season since reporting began in 2004 and 5, except for the 2009 pandemic. Have you heard anything about the 150, 149 children that have died of the flu this season? Nothing. Nothing. Now, because 38 million have gotten the flu, that's just an estimate, by the way. They don't know for sure. Could be 10 million less, could be 10 million more. All that they know for sure is who's tested and how many die. So if you've tested positive for the flu, if you just use that number, 10% of those tested, because 230,000 have tested positive for it, 10% of them have died. Now, the death rate that Tedros threw out there on March 3rd, he was basing it on what he knew at the time, most likely from China, and it was based on those that had been tested for coronavirus and those that had died. And at that point, there had been very little testing done. If you look back at this crisis over the past, what would this be, 2 weeks, on March 8th. This was the early, early stage of it. This was the day before CNN came out and said, you know what? This is a pandemic. This is going to spread everywhere. We're going to be even out ahead of Tedros and the World Health Organization. CNN did that on March 9th. The day before March 9th, there were 22 deaths in all of the United States out of 541 cases. Are you guys able to even pull that from my notes and just show that whole chart? March 8th, there was 22 deaths, 541 cases. That's a death rate. If you just go with the cases tested and the deaths that result, or the deaths that came from it, it was something like a 4% death rate. The next day, there were 26 deaths of 704 tested cases, and the death rate went down to 3.69. Well, you can get the idea. All of the people who hate President Trump, that's one thing they keyed in on. There haven't been enough people tested. There haven't been enough people tested. But there you can see it. If you're watching the YouTube stream, as more and more people get tested, yes, the death rate's going up. As of this morning, it was 275. You can see that in the chart. And then the death rate, the percentage, look at how it just keeps going down on the right. This morning, it was at 1.39%. 275 deaths out of 19,774 that have been tested positive. And keep in mind that we have no idea how many have the virus and who have not been tested. If you've listened to the program this past week, you've heard me say articles or read from articles that have said there's people now that have been tested. They didn't even know they didn't think they were sick. And then you have all these other dire predictions, millions and millions and millions of people. The governor of Ohio says that they've already got 300,000 cases. And so if you're working with a 3.4% percentage, that probably would trigger a panic. Did you know in New York right now, the state of New York, the state that locked down last night, there's 56 New Yorkers that have died of coronavirus. 8,459 have been tested positive for the virus, which means the death rate in New York is 0.66%. Here's some more statistics. South Korea's death rate, 0.6%. Germany's death rate, 0.3%. And you know what's unique about South Korea and Germany? These two nations have performed more tests than any other nations on Earth. So you get the trend here. You see the trajectory. The more people that are tested, and fine, let's create more test kits. We're doing everything we can, the Trump administration is saying. Let's get as many people tested as possible. But you better be careful what you wish for if you're on the radical left. Because the more that are tested for this disease, the more we see that it's not as lethal, it's not as deadly as everyone was saying at the start. Certainly not as deadly as Tedros said on March 3rd. There was an article I read from a couple of days ago where the author, and he's a health professional himself, but he referred to that Diamond Princess ship, the cruise, all those elderly people that came down with the disease, and they were quarantined inside that ship. He says here, the one situation where an entire closed population was tested was the Diamond Princess cruise ship and its quarantine passengers. Says the case for fatality rate there was 1%. But he says this was largely an elderly population in which the death rate from coronavirus is much higher. So they had a number of cases, I guess it was several hundred, and then a handful who died. So 1% of those who had the disease died. And as he says, most of them were elderly people, which means that the death rate could be much lower than 1%. So you see it's coming down closer to the ordinary flu level. Now, I suppose you could get into an argument all day as to, well, what's a little bit more lethal than this, or what's not a little bit more lethal. But the fact remains, every day, every week, every year, thousands upon thousands of deaths for a variety of causes, 26,000 each day for cancer, who knows how many thousand for heart disease, drug overdoses, opioid overdoses, suicides, sickness, disease. I forget the figure on communicable diseases. I think worldwide it's hundreds of thousands per year, something like 200, 300,000. So far, coronavirus is up to 11,000, which is certainly a tragedy, especially in places like Italy and Iran. It's a disease. It's spreading. It is killing people. But you're not being told the whole story. That's been carefully manipulated by the communist Chinese government, by the United Nations, and by the radical left. And maybe some of it is being exploited just because it happens to be here. Look at what Britain did with its massive expansion of government. But some of it's also being weaponized. That's obvious. That's becoming clearer as we go. Where is CNN? What, just even the drop in the percentage, you would think these news networks would be saying, listen, in the interest of not stirring up a panic or a hysteria, we're happy to report to you that the death rate, the death percentage, is actually going down the more people get tested. It's still something to be very careful about. It's still something that you want to be mindful of. Wash your hands. Remember certain laws or principles of hygiene. Quarantine yourself if you get sick. But no, it's not that. You have reporters like yesterday openly challenging the president, saying, how can you get up there and give hope to America? There is no hope. That's what this president's going up against. It was CNN, not the WHO. It was CNN that first declared this to be a pandemic. That was Sanjay Gupta, the CNN health guru. He came out with an article on March 9th and said, hey, we've got to, we're going to call this a pandemic, even though no one else is, even though the World Health Organization won't do it yet. And that was when stock markets were just plummeting. That Friday before, I think March 9th was a Monday, CNN makes that announcement, the stocks plummet further. And there's a few in the media that get up and say, listen, this is being weaponized. One of the few, Trish Regan, she said on her program, Fox Business Network, March 9th, this is clip 5.
The chorus of hate being leveled at the president is nearing a crescendo as Democrats blame him and only him for a virus that originated halfway around the world. This is yet another attempt to impeach the president. And sadly, it seems they care very little for any of the destruction they are leaving in their wake. Losses in the stock market. All this, unfortunately, just part of the political casualties.
She was suspended from Fox Business Network just a few days after that particular monologue. The New York Times reported that the Fox Business anchor, Trish Regan, whose on-air dismissal of the coronavirus as another attempt to impeach the president left her cable network, Fox, facing a firestorm of criticism this week. She's been removed from her primetime slot for the foreseeable future. The Fox executive said, hey, we're not going to go against the conventional wisdom here. Tucker Carlson, that same night, he got up and he broke from some of the hardliners, the hardline defenders of the president. He got up and said, hey, this is not ordinary. This is a serious problem. People have been minimizing it. The president, as you know, has been a pretty big fan of Fox. He obviously knows he doesn't have CNN support for anything. That's why he said in that clip I played that you have a disreputable network. But when in that early part of the week, this is when so many of us were coming back from the college campout. If this president starts to lose Fox, he's going up against everybody. So it's Sanjay Gupta. It's the executives at Fox. And then the World Health Organization, March 11th. As I say, I want to work more with this timeline and see if there's even other details that we can turn up. But then the World Health Organization comes out on March 11th and says it's a pandemic. And so what is the president left to do? I mean, he had already done a lot. But now he wasn't just fighting the disease. Now he was fighting the panic. And so he took to the airwaves himself Wednesday night. He institutes the travel ban on Europe. They criticize him for that speech on Thursday. Then Friday, he declares a national emergency. That was all in the lead up to this past week that we've seen. Now we're to the point where everything is being shut down. Stock market has cratered. There's a little bit of good news to report. We heard from the Director General of the World Health Organization yesterday that China is reporting zero infections. They have conquered it. Tedros said yesterday, for the first time, China has reported no domestic coronavirus cases. This is an amazing achievement, which gives us all reassurance that this can be beaten. He loves the communist Chinese government. He loves them. They've handled everything perfectly. It says, we don't know what, well, those are the clips or tweets, I guess, from January 30th. I was just going to repeat that, but I can forget about it. You piece all of this together, though, you see clearly that this has been weaponized to try to bring down a presidency. You talk about collusion. China's disinformation. They started the virus. They detained the ones that were trying to warn the world. They sent them to detention camps. You saw what they did last year to Hong Kong, the protesters there. Look at how many people are beholden to China. Look at how many have been sold out. All these politicians, including the one running against President Trump this fall, his family. You've got the communist Chinese government. You've got the United Nations, the World Health Organization, the radical left, which, as my father says, is far worse than communism and Marxism. And they would all love to see a Biden presidency. You can be sure of that. This is what CNN said yesterday with China reaching this milestone. And I played it on the program yesterday. All of these reports from the media just praising China and the way they handled this crisis. In America, it's another story. Oh, it's a disaster. It's a disaster there. CNN said yesterday, the milestone will likely be held up as proof of the ongoing success of China's sweeping top-down efforts to control the virus, despite persistent allegations that local officials mishandled the initial outbreak. Just last month, mainland China was reporting thousands of new cases every day and was considered the most high-risk infection area in the world. But now they've conquered it. This is CNN reporting on China. What a milestone for them. That was yesterday, and you contrast this with this column from CNN. Trump peddles unsubstantiated hope in dark times. How dare Donald Trump try to offer hope to the United States? How dare he talk about, hey, we're working on this. This medicine might be good. Hey, we'll get through this. How dare he? It says, to fight the coronavirus, President Trump is adopting the audacity of false hope. As the pandemic spreads like quicksilver across the U.S. and questions mount about the federal government's response amid chronic shortages in hospitals, the White House seems to be trying to get everyone to look the other way. He's just not doing anything. It's holding out the promise of hope and optimism to shift attention from the reality of alarming rises in infections, a building economic crisis, a shortage of ventilators, the federal government's botched coronavirus testing rollout, and revelations that doctors were told to use bandanas as masks. It's a disaster in the United States. In China, it's great. China's wonderful. China's a utopia. You know, as the New York Times one columnist said on Rachel Maddow a week ago, I played those clips earlier this week too, you know, those detention camps in China, they're not so bad. They're not so bad. It says the approach, which contrasts with Trump's serious, impressively focused behavior as recently as Monday, is beginning to stir a familiar question inseparable from his presidency. Is he most dedicated to the national interest and reflecting the true state of the crisis, or his own political vitality? Does he even care about the United States? Or is it just about him? Yesterday, he had this exchange with an NBC reporter. He was talking about drugs they were testing and so on. And this reporter didn't like that at all. How could you give hope? Aren't you just trying to put a positive spin on this dire, dire situation? Here's how that exchange went down. Clip three.
Is it possible that your impulse to put a positive spin on things may be giving Americans a false sense of hope?
No, I don't think so.
Representing preparedness right now.
No, I don't think so. I think.
What do you say the Americans were scared, though? I guess nearly 200 dead, 14,000 who were sick, millions, as you witnessed, who are scared right now. What do you say to Americans who are watching you right now who are scared?
I say that you're a terrible reporter. That's what I say.
I
think it's a very nasty question, and I think it's a very bad signal that you're putting out to the American people. The American people are looking for answers, and they're looking for hope. And you're doing sensationalism, and the same with NBC and Comcast.
So
I call it Comcast. Let me just ask for whom you work. Let me just say something. That's really bad reporting. And you ought to get back to reporting instead of sensationalism. Let's see if it works. It might and it might not. I happen to feel good about it, but who knows? I've been right a lot. Let's see what happens.
Let's see what happens, he said. And we will, as much as this was a fluid situation all through this past week, it'll be interesting to see what happens in the next few days. I'm running out of time here. I want to try to get to a few articles that suggest that this isn't going to continue, this lockdown where we paralyze ourselves because of a disease that we might now find out is not as deadly as we thought or as we were told. But here's the theme coming from the news. You saw it in that column I just read. You heard it from that man himself. The false sense of hope. There is no hope, they're saying. When the governor of California said, we're going into lockdown, we've got 40 million people, 20 to 25 million are getting this disease. So if we take the director general statistics, that means 600,000-700,000 people are going to die in California. That's what they're saying. Now, the president is saying, look, we're working on these drugs, we're working on these vaccines, and we're certainly not supporters of that approach either. But look at the bottom line. Look at the number of deaths. Look at the declining percentage in the death rate. That won't stop them. This is their opportunity. They're all in. with total destruction, the U.S. economy, the world economy, if need be. The goal here, to blot it out, just to blot it out. Total destruction. Of course, they see it as their only way to return to power, and that's what they lust for. They want power. Listen to New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio scaremongering just yesterday on MSNBC, clip four.
The reality today, this minute, Mika, is if the president does not act in a matter of days, because look at the trajectory of this crisis. You can see it clear as a bell now. The president does not act within days to maximize the use of the Defense Production Act, to put every company that can produce a ventilator or a surgical mask or any other necessary supply, put them on full 24/7 production and guarantee that those products get to the front line, get to where the need is greatest. If he doesn't do that in the next few days, if he does not mobilize the United States military immediately, not only will hundreds die around the nation who didn't need to die, thousands will die around the nation who didn't need to die. People who will die waiting to get into a hospital, people who will die at a hospital because there is no equipment or there's no medical personnel who can help them in time.
Die, die, die. Just everybody's dying. And it's President Trump's fault. If he doesn't nationalize everything, government control, he wants to go in the direction Britain's going in. If he doesn't nationalize all these companies, if he doesn't mobilize the military, Governor Newsom in California, he hasn't ruled that out. Look, we're not at martial law yet, but we could be there. We could. We do have that power. Bill de Blasio himself, he said in an interview about a week ago, I have extraordinary powers to tell people where they can and can't go. It's the mayor of New York City. Total shutdown. All the non-essentials, they're shut down. Now we'll leave the supermarkets open. And oh yeah, the liquor stores, we get too much tax revenue from that. How many deaths come as a result of drinking too much alcohol from a liquor store? Let's take their reasoning and advance it further. Let's apply it to everything. How many? Governor Cuomo said yesterday, I want to be able to say to the people of New York, I did everything we could do. And if everything we do saves just one life from corona, I'll be happy. What if putting a universal ban on cars saved one life? Well, it would save more than that. It would save thousands. Here you're talking about the lives of millions all across the state of New York. Millions of people shutting it down. Thousands of companies driven into bankruptcy. Unemployed millions, if this goes on long enough. Does that cause any problems for society? Well, but we have to do this because there could be a run on the hospitals. Okay, so instead of a run on the hospitals, you shut everything down? That's the solution? The cure is worse, far worse than the disease. The London Times said yesterday, quoting a healthcare professional, the impact of social isolation on mental health could be worse than the toll of coronavirus itself. Tony Giuliano, policy manager for the Mental Health Foundation Scotland, said businesses going under in loneliness could result in increases in depression, addictions, and suicide. This is a similar point that Victor Davis Hanson has made. He expressed concern that job insecurity had been clearly linked with suicide. An international study which looked at people who took their own lives in 63 countries over 11 years found about a fifth were linked to unemployment. But you see, you can't trace those statistics as neatly to this website that's showing every single death related to suicide or drug overdose. And so they don't have to worry about it. No one's going to hold them to account. If everything we do saves just one life, I'll be happy. So a total shutdown of the economy to save one life from the flu? You think about Leviticus 26. And upon them that are left alive of you, I will send a faintness into their hearts in the lands of their enemies, and the sound of a shaken leaf shall chase them. And they shall flee as fleeing from a sword. You're going to die. Oh, it was just a little leaf. Okay. And they shall fall when none pursues, and they shall fall one upon another, as it were before a sword, when none pursues, and you shall have no power to stand before your enemies. You see how weak we're going to be? You see how unprepared we're going to be when the real trouble comes? Verse 16 of that same chapter, God says, I'll even appoint over you terror. We often apply that, of course, to terrorism. That's a curse as well. But look at the self-inflicted terror. People frightened because of people like Sanjay Gupta and Director General Tedros, who wanted Robert Mugabe as an assistant. Because of Chinese disinformation. Because of the radical left, which is worse than communism and Marxism. John Hinderaker at Powerline, he said, the economic devastation that is now playing out before our eyes is not caused by the Wuhan flu virus. In the last 21 days, approximately 160,000 Americans have died. Of that number, 150 were killed by the Wuhan virus. If governments at all levels had done nothing other than eliminating regulatory barriers to the deployment of already existing medicines, would the virus have killed more Americans? Yes, that is what flu bugs do. Would it kill more than 13,000 or so who have died from this year's seasonal flu virus? Well, it's actually 23,000, according to the CDC. Who knows, he says. More than the estimated 80,000 who were killed by the flu in the U.S. just 2 years ago? I doubt it. Worldwide, it has killed only a little more than one-tenth that number. He says the answers to those questions are speculative, but this is not. By dictating a virtual cessation of economic activity, governments at all levels, but especially state and local, are causing an economic collapse, the likes of which, if it continues, we have not seen since the Great Depression, if ever. When has such a government-caused disaster comparably devastated a non-socialist country? He says, not often. I agree with the Wall Street Journal editorial that Scott quoted from this morning, but I think it's too mild. Here is a prediction. The deaths of Americans caused by the Wuhan flu bug will be dwarfed by the suicides committed by people whose life savings have been wiped out, whose businesses have been bankrupted, whose jobs have been lost, and whose prospects have been blighted by the insane overreaction we now see from our governments. That overreaction must stop right now, before it's too late. If it's not too late already. He's not alone. You're starting to see more and more columns like this, here in the UK as well. And there was that one, as I say, talking about President Trump. This ensures his re-election. Far from his here again. People are starting to take polls on how he's handling the crisis. He's doing a pretty good job. And then you got Bill de Blasio there saying, people are dying. He's not doing anything. Who are they going to believe in the end? Well, we'll see. There's still some unknowns here. But we know what it says in 2 Kings 14. God uses Jeroboam. He uses the Jeroboam administration to save Israel, to prevent Israel from being blotted out. And we'll see just how long that temporary saving actually lasts. I'll take a short break, and when we come back, we'll just briefly, very, very briefly, I wanted to try to keep this within 90 minutes, we'll conclude with a few verses from a really encouraging psalm. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show, special Saturday edition. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Are we living in the last days? Some dismiss the notion as fanatical, but world leaders and news analysts are issuing warnings that are becoming more and more dire. Could Bible prophecies about the last days actually be accurate? Our brochure can help guide you through the relevant news and history and help you compare these events to what the Bible says. Are we living in the last days? This brochure is available for free right now at thetrumpet.com. From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Fleury.
We're up over 1,000 viewers watching right now on the YouTube stream. That's certainly a record for our radio program. So it's great to have a nice sized audience on this self-isolation day Saturday, God's Sabbath. It's great to have you here with us. Psalm 91, any way that you look at these problems, these crises, these troubles, it's obvious. It's obvious to us that it's just getting worse, like Paul said in 2 Timothy 3. These evils, these sins in the last days, worse and worse and worse. Whether they're spreading diseases or self-inflicted wounds or moral sickness or nations going bankrupt or economies collapsing, we need God's help and protection. We need each other. We need each other's prayers of intercession and support. We are God's family. Psalm 91 says, "He that dwells in the secret place of the Most High shall abide under the shadow of the Almighty. I will say of the Eternal, He is my refuge and my fortress, my God, in Him will I trust." When all else is failing around us, we can place our trust in God. We can cast all of our cares upon Him because He cares for us, like Peter said. Surely, verse 3, He shall deliver you from the snare of the fowler and from the noisome pestilence. He shall cover you with His feathers, and under His wings shall you trust. His truth shall be your shield and buckler. You shall not be afraid for terror by night, nor for the arrow that flies by day, nor for the pestilence that walks in darkness, nor for the destruction that wastes at noonday. We don't have to be afraid of anything. We can go about our daily routine with a sound mind, as I covered earlier this week. God gives us that soundness. He doesn't give us the spirit of fear, but of love, of power, of a sound mind. It says here, 1,000 shall fall at your side and 10,000 at your right hand, but it shall not come near you. Only with your eyes shall you behold and see the reward of the wicked, because you have made the Eternal, which is my refuge, even the Most High, your habitation. There shall no evil befall you, neither shall any plague come near your dwelling. For He shall give His angels charge over you to keep you in all your ways. God has an army of angels there to
keep charge over us, to look after us, to help us. It's a dangerous world. Humanly speaking, there's risks that we take daily. We don't tempt God, obviously. We don't want to go and jump off a cliff and say, well, save me, God. We use wisdom. We, as I said earlier this week, we practice the laws of quarantine out of love for our neighbors. We strive to obey the health laws, hygiene, health, sleep, proper diet, sunlight, fresh air, positive mental outlook, physical exercise. And if we're doing what we know we should be doing, if we're striving to obey God, what a wonderful comfort that is. No evil shall befall you, it says. He'll give angels his charge over you. Verse 12, they shall bear you up in their hands, lest you dash your foot against a stone. You shall tread upon the lion and adder. The young lion and the dragon shall you trample under feet, because he has set his love upon me. Therefore will I deliver him. I will set him on high because he has known my name. God does deliver. God does protect. God does heal. God does open doors for us. Verse 15 says, he shall call upon me and I will answer him. I will be with him in trouble. I will deliver him and honor him. With long life, it says finally, with long life will I satisfy him and show him my salvation. In these troubling times, in these times of mounting troubles, set your cares on God. Set your heart on God and his way. Look to God as your shepherd, as your guide. Well, it's been great to have you join us for this special presentation. Don't forget that Monday through Friday, we're on live every day. 1 in the afternoon, I guess this next week it'll be noon here in the UK for one more week. And of course, 7 a.m. in the morning, Central Standard Time, 8 a.m. on the East Coast of the United States, and then lots of different times all over the world for our small but growing group of listeners to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is a special edition of the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email us, send comments, td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us today. See you Monday.